This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Thank you very much indeed. The session which I'm now going to chair is called Tips and Tricks. I'm a veteran guide dog user. I trained with my first guide dog back in September 1974. And I've had 8 dogs since then. Not all of them have made the distance. There have been some terrible tragedies. And we have to learn to cope with that. So I'm going to speak as a veteran, and after that I'm going to invite people to give advice or maybe talk about some of the gadgets that you carry around with you to help facilitate your movement through the world with a guide dog. When I trained with my first dog in 1974, it was the most traumatic experience of my life. I walked into the Blind Society in 1967, this is in Sydney, unable to read, but still able to get around, and then over the next 6 years I lost that bit of sight, and I think that's the most traumatic time for any person who is blind or vision impaired, when we lose that last bit of sight that we used to get around independently. And I was hooked up to a dog that went like an express train. It was a Labrador, his golden Labrador called Ryan, and he was bred at the kennels in Melbourne. And I spent nearly the whole 4 weeks in the training trying to get him to slow down, being taught a dozen or so techniques to get him to slow down. I would have to pull on the handle and say, "Steady, Ryan," and he'd throw his shoulders into the breastplate and pull even harder. So then I'd have to make him stop and sit. Then I'd have to tell him to turn back and keep turning back until I managed to slow him down. And I couldn't understand why this had to be done with a dog which was supposed to, be the big tawny lion of a dog that was going to rescue me from my problems. I couldn't understand why he kept putting me into every bit of bad space that I went down there to train with him to get away from me, running me into rose bushes and not taking any notice of traffic and all the rest of it. And it wasn't until much later that I realised that I was being trained to become the dog's trainer, and I had to keep him up to all these things. He wasn't the mythical, mystical, magical creature that I was led to believe that he was. And when I went home with him, things were quite disastrous. I had really long routes to walk, country walks, and I just didn't know how to handle him, and we both developed anxiety. And so Ryan went back 12 months later, and I trained with my second dog, who was a red Kelpie sheepdog, and he was exactly the opposite. He used to trot along quite happily beside me, but as soon as I got home, he'd want to go out and work again. And I just couldn't keep the work up to him. And that dog I would have succeeded with, but he died tragically of a poisoned bait. Someone was throwing baits around. So then I trained with the next little dog, Farina, and I noticed that just in the few years since I'd first been down there, that there were some changes made. The old military drill seemed to have been pushed into the background a bit, because Farina was a very mild little dog, and I lasted the full distance with her. She moved very slowly and gently. I had no speed control problems with her, so something must have been done to try to put a stop to that problem. And after that, I had 5 more dogs. I'm now up to number 8. And the first tip, or the first trick that I would like to teach people who are new to guide dog training is, or who've only had 1 or 2 dogs, is never expect the same dog twice. That's I think that's probably one of the most important things that I've learned over the 8 dogs that I've had. I had one dog called Corey who turned into a cot case every time there was a thunderstorm. It was just amazing. I'd be downtown and a thunderstorm would suddenly turn up, and Corey had to be literally carried out to the taxi on a stretcher by people at the Toowoomba City Library or anywhere else where I happened to be at the time. And one of the tricks that I learnt then was to switch on the wireless every morning, make sure that I listened to the weather report, and if they said that there was any possibility of a thunderstorm in the area, I would leave Corey at home and go out to catch the bus with a cane. Also, with regard to public access to a dog, I've had dogs that lunge for everyone who says, "Oh, aren't you beautiful?" You know, and they want that friendship. And I've had others who just stick their noses up in the air and say, you know, buzz off. Other ones that are not interested in talking to the public. So when the public say, can I pat your dog, I say, it doesn't really matter because I know they're going to get the cold shoulder. But that's another difference that I've noticed in them, that some like public attention and some don't. One of the things that I've learned is never put too much on the dog to begin with. Never to expect too much to begin with. I've been roused on by trainers for that one. So it's important to take things slowly at the beginning and to learn the routes thoroughly one by one. I'm one of these people who don't pick my feet up when I walk, so I trip on every crack in the footpath, and I've trained every one of my dogs to stop where there are major cracks or holes in the footpath, and that's a very handy thing that we can get them to do, to train them to do things that we specifically want them to do. Also, when I go home at night times, if I've added the location of a new bin or a new bench or something like that to my repertoire, then I make notes about it so I know when I go into a street where I can find these things. So it's very important to build up a landscape, not only in our minds, but also to have a good body of notes at home about the different streets that we're going to. I've been shocked at the way that all of my dogs have found their way back to locations in a street where I haven't been for years, you know, might be 2 or 3 years, and they go straight in through the gate again. When we came back to this hotel, and Daisy, the O&M instructor from RBS, took me out, she could see Quinny pointing in all the directions where we'd gone last time we were here. And that's quite amazing that she remembered that. It's important to enjoy walking with the dog. One of the things that I don't like about walking through the CBDs of towns is we have to be on full alert. You know, have to watch for stuff on the pavement, watch for distractions, skateboards, prams and street furniture and all that rubbish, you know. But when I walk up to my local shopping centre, which is about a mile away, there's nothing there on the way and nothing back again, so I can just switch off and enjoy the walk. Another reason why it's a good idea to listen to a weather forecast before we go out is to see how hot it's going to be. I have never been able to get a dog to wear a pair of shoes, and I'd like to hear people's stories about that when we come to our question time. Every trainer and every dog that I've had has been tried with shoes, but it just doesn't work out. So that's a problem. If it's 28 degrees or over, then by midday the pavements are just too hot, and it's just impossible to walk them down there. A couple of times I've been caught out, and I've had to actually been in the CBD, and those metal plates that they're expected to stand on while they're waiting to cross a road are an enormous problem, so it's important to stand back in the shade of the shops and then make a dash when the lights change. That's right. In the early days, we were forbidden canes. We weren't allowed to carry cane with us. And that was a shocking innovation when I was told by a Queensland guide dog that I could take the cane with me, and if I found myself in a difficult situation, to just get the cane out and find my way around. And I've found that a marvellous facility, but that was forbidden in the early days. It was just all military drill, and we weren't allowed to take our canes or anything like that. And I don't think anyone would go out with a guide dog now, even with the best guide dog in the world, and not take a cane as a backup. Another thing that I learnt the hard way was never to step out blind, never to trust the luck, never to think, I'll just dash across here and everything will be all right. It's something that we must never ever do that one, because we can end up in very, very serious situations. Things are there that we don't think are there. Also, it's important when we hear something moving towards us, like bicycles or skateboards or something like that, to just stop and stand over near a wall or a fence. I never take it on anyone like that. You know, if there are skateboards around or rushing children and so on, I just make sure that I step out of the way. The usual seasonal problems with nuts on the ground and magpies. Every one of us would have trodden on a gum nut and the ground's gone from under us and there's nothing we can do about it. Magpies are on at the moment, I think. Always have to wear a strong hat. I think we've all been dive bombed at some stages or stage or other. So that's another thing that we must... always accept assistance around roadworks or footpath works. I've sometimes found that they've got barriers there, and when I reach the end of the barrier and try to go around in what I think is a driveway, there's a big drain hole there. And if there are men around when they've got the covers up and barriers around, then I always accept assistance. Had a lot of trouble over the years trying to crack down on people who park their cars across footpaths. And they're very rude and very ignorant. And they say, well, why me? You know, well, why should I have to get my car out of the way when everyone else can park theirs there? And if I telephone the police, they say, oh, look, dear, everyone does that. You know, there's nothing we can do about nothing we can do about that one. Important always to look after the dog, carry water and biscuits and things like that. And always make sure we carry our identification in case we get challenged. It still happens to me. The Toowoomba TAFE is a very important bus stop in Toowoomba. I get the bus into the city from there and a bus driver wouldn't let me on one morning and the other passengers went to town on him. He was he was from an overseas country and they went to town on him and told him that he had to take me on board. So I think that's about all of the advice that I can offer as someone who's had so many dogs and has learned something new from each one. I've had dogs that haven't really bothered sniffing much around at the environment, but the one I've got now has to be very heavily muzzled everywhere she goes. She's just a little sniffer. And she won't work without that discipline strip across her nose. So they're like us, they're all different. And they're all lovable. And, of course, I've been through the tragedy of terrible loss. You know, when the dog dies, it's like a member of the family, you know. It's just awful. And even though we know that there's going to be another dog, it's going to be a different dog. And they all live on in our hearts with their different memories. So I'll throw it open to the floor now. I'm sure that I'll learn a lot from different experiences that people have had. So I'll hand the microphone back. And see who's got some good ideas.
It wasn't so much an idea because it's great hearing the pearls of wisdom. But just on that last point, has the association thought about putting together some sort of group of a support group for people that do lose their dogs? Because I know we have it at Seeing Eye Dogs, a group of people or people that people can talk to in time of tragedy and loss, and it's often a very difficult thing to go through. And I just wondered if this group would consider that a benefit for those, particularly those who've had a number of dogs and have gone through it a number of times, to be there to offer support to others.
I also wanted to just mention that having had a number of dogs, when you're getting a bit frazzled yourself, it's always a good idea not to put any more pressure on the dog, but to actually go back the other way and ease up the pressure, maybe standing aside or just sort of trying to geographically orientate yourself to where you are or where you're trying to get to. Sometimes obstacles and things that weren't there literally an hour or two ago can suddenly be there, and it can be quite off-putting. The other thing is that I think that the idea of a support group would be magical. My first dog, tragically when Lady Nell was operating, before Cedar, passed away after, somebody had thrown poison food over the fence, and then he had a massive coronary. And in fact, it's a lot closer than you know, people that you might know that have passed, because I can remember the exact minute that the vet rang me at 16 past two in the morning to tell me that Howard had passed on. So it is something that stays with you permanently, and every dog certainly has their own personality that you can remember, their traits and their funny, amusing antics and the way they treat you, and you communicate with them on a psychological way. And just my thoughts.
It's Erica. I do a lot of work with pedestrian and cyclist groups and committees in Western Australia, and my best advice is to keep walking in the path of travel that you're going, at the rate that you're going, at the position on the path that you're going, and let everyone else work around you. If you start taking evasive action, which I know happens a lot here with the South Australian dog guide users, that's when accidents actually occur, because a dog guide handler might suddenly lurch either left or lurch either right, and suddenly they collide with either the pedestrians or the cyclists. So if you just keep going in your path of travel, just let everyone work around you.
And before I offer my tip, thanks to Erica for doing the kilometres during the weekend on the mic. So well done. Tip is just one about a software application for those who use iOS and VoiceOver. Many of us do that, many of us don't. But if you get a chance to get hold of an app called Blind Square, you should really... It can be used in conjunction with other GPS mapping, so you can have your Google Maps going and in the background you've got Blind Square. And it's a super rich database of worldwide places that we need to go, but you also get intersection distances, points of interest, things around your clock, all the things you might want to search for. It's exceedingly valuable. I found it to be so. It's getting better. And it's not the cheapest app you'll find, but it would be the best $40 I've ever spent in relation to navigation and wayfinding. So that would be my tip. Magpies, just be friends with them. Is my advice, and the way we did that, didn't know, Grammy and Oliver collected up the fur and put it out the back, and we're going to put it in the bin, and the magpies came down, raided the bag, and now they look out for him to be groomed, because they just take the fur and put it in their nest. So he's their number one fan.
In South Australia, they're minor birds, the ones that are swooping you as you go up and down South Terrace.
Hi everyone, it's Penny. Just about dog boots, I find put them on the back paws first. That causes the dog less stress, and then once they're sort of used to having boots on their back feet, then you can add the front ones. It still makes them do that funny little dance and they look silly, but it's a better experience if you start with the back feet first.
Just in regard to what Harry's suggestion, around grief, and it's something that has been on our agenda for a while, but... we really did need to focus on that in a more professional way, to bring in something that's going to really assist people. We have assisted handlers in an ad hoc sort of basis and linking them up with peers with experience around that, but it's a very difficult one, and it's something that we really do want to do properly when we do it. But it is on our agenda.
I've got a tip. Microfiber towels. An amazing amount of water do they hold when your dog has been swimming in filthy rivers, which I never do, of course. And then you dry her off, and it's better than just your average, you know, daggy towel that you found in the, you know, that's old and has holes in it. Microfiber towels. You can virtually wring them out once you've dried your dog. Or a chamois is another one, and they're smaller, and you can just chuck it in your backpack. Even the microfiber towels are quite small, quite compact, and again hold an amazing amount of water in them.
Where do you get them?
Microfiber towels.
Yeah.
Oh, Aldi. There are proper pet ones. I can't remember the brand. I actually have one upstairs. Duh, I should have brought it down.
Soggy Doggy. Soggy Doggy, and you can buy that one on Dog Culture.
Oh, and Dog Culture. But if you look up on the internet, just microfiber pet towels, you should be able to find They're not cheap sometimes, but sometimes they have sales. Like I got mine, I think they were $18 for the large, and I got mine for $12. So I ordered like four of them, and I just use those now. Aldi had them on special for, I think, $8 at one stage. Big W also have them. And the ones at Big W have little pockets that you can chuck your hands in while you're actually drying your dog so your hands don't get grotty. So, yeah, anyway.
Camping and disposal stores, Penny's hollering out. Do you want to finish off your holler? Okay, well, getting back to Martine asking what a chamois is, ShamWow for anyone who watches late night television from our good friends at Global Shop Direct. And now I was going to go to Craig because he put his hand up before Sheila.
Sheila. That's okay. Just think of Galar and you'll get Shala. That's what my foster kids used to say. Soggy Doggy is something that I've started using because we're often out in the rain, so it's also good to have in your backpack on rainy days. My office companions don't appreciate a wet dog turning up in the middle of their laps. The other one that I've just ordered on this dog cultural website that I've just found is there's a bottle that you can get now that one side is water and the other side of that bottle is a space for treats. So you've got them in both, and it's one of the squeeze bottles, so the water comes out at a good rate. I haven't used it yet, but it really fits the purpose of just having to have one container in your bag instead of two, basically.
Mine's not a trick or treat, but what I'm looking at and we're exploring at the moment is that whilst I'm totally blind, I'm also hearing impaired a bit as well, and working with Toilet on Demand and but there's times there where when he would like to visit the patch. She was trained originally to whine at the door, which somehow I must have missed somewhere along the track. But there was an option suggested at the moment where maybe using a bell where she rings. Well, when I relocate back to my home, it's not going to be practical because where the door that she'd be using or where the bell may not necessarily be in proximity, i.e. like the lounge room or the computer room or something like that. I'm just wondering what other people, if they do they have that opportunity to have some sort of means of the dog communicating to them?
No direct answers to that. I was going to say one of the things that Greg's dog Nicholas has been doing is he carries his own poo bags on his own harness in one of those little dog bones. So he's a working dog, so he should keep on working.
I've kind of got an answer, well, not really an answer, but a suggestion. And certainly with the seeing eye dogs that I've had, they just won't leave you alone.
Yeah.
They kind of come and then they go and then they come back and then they go. And then if you're really, really not listening, they'll nudge you under the arm. And then if you're really, really not listening, they'll let out this little high-pitched bark. Like, are you serious? I really, really need to go. And they're restless. Like, if they're under your chair or something, they just are not getting comfortable. Often that will be because they're needing to go. Also, if you're walking along the footpath and they're straying, like somewhere, especially if it's familiar and suddenly they're just not concentrating and you're feeling that you're not paying attention, your head's spinning, you know, moving, you're not walking a straight line, the dog isn't walking a straight line, often that can be because they need to go.
I just wondered, as I'm about to get into the NDIS, has anybody got any ideas about such things that I can claim for that are not just the normal things, but anything else, so I can get it pretty well right away? Thank you.
Yeah, I can probably help you out a little bit there, Karen, and is
It's a good thing to sit down and work out what it is that you want to achieve, because that's the sort of things they're going to be looking for when you write up your plan. Not that you want, you know, joy screenwriting software, but why you need it, you know, to be able to write your letters, to be able to do assignments if you happen to be studying or whatever. The same with the dog guide, the same with any pieces of equipment or stuff that you're going to be asking for. You need to have some sort of an explanation about why, how that's going to improve your life. So it's important when you plan out what your goals are, everything that's going to revolve around what your goals are. When people come to do your assessment for whatever piece of equipment that you've got, that's what they'll be looking at, and then looking for a solution for you to achieve those goals.
Yeah, hi. I'm sorry, I just had to interrupt the take my dog out, but as I was coming back in, you were talking about distractions and so forth, and for about 10 or 15 minutes, he was just sitting there nudging me leg. He wanted to go, and I had no choice, and it's just some of those things you have to pick up on. They certainly let you know when they want to do whatever they want to do, you know, like even if you've tried before. So, yeah, I do apologise for that, so.
I don't know who mentioned it yesterday, but a dog guide that talks would be a good invention. Karen mentioned that yesterday.
Right, I think we've had a good scout around. Someone told me the other day that they were going to introduce drones to deliver takeaway, and I thought, I wonder what Quinny would do if I ordered a pizza and suddenly a little drone came over the gate, you know, whether she'd... Give the drone the same serve that she gives the postman. Does anyone have any problems with people coming to their homes? When Mark Lyle gave me Quinny, he told me that she was a very, very suspicious little dog. And I was quite shocked at the way that she just flies at the door and the gate, you know, with the most shocking... barks and things like that. I don't think anyone would bother me. I have actually found that very handy with a guide dog. During all the years that I've had one, I've never been broken into, although people on either side of me have done, and had money stolen and jewels stolen and things like that. I did hear talk not long after I moved into Toowoomba that someone found a list somewhere, maybe they were the police, of a list of all the people in the Toowoomba City area who had dogs. So someone had hacked into the council computers and found out who had dogs, and not one of those houses had been broken into. So that is a very good reason to have a dog around. And I haven't.
Well, you're the
bird. That's right. That's right. There's only been one incident. There was a stepladder at the back of the house, and one night I had two dogs. I had Corey and Faber. Faber was retired, and I was listening to Four Corners, and they both flew at the door near the driveway and barked and listened for a while, and then they went back to lay down again, so I didn't take any notice. And the next morning I'd heard that a neighbour had found my ladder up against her back window. Someone had walked down my driveway. It was someone who knew that the ladder was there. And I do think that there are suspicions, although they didn't let me know who it was, but had walked down my driveway and thrown the ladder up against the window next door and got the money out. But I'd like to know if other people have had similar benefits where they've been able to use the guide dog, not only as a guide dog, but as a guard dog.
Yes, Nina is a guide dog and a guard dog. When I first got her, she didn't bark. Well, she barked, but she used to be trained not to bark when someone knocked on the door. I had an incident with a taxi driver where I was consoling him about having the dog in the car, and no, she's gentle, she's trained, she's perfectly behaved. Halfway through the trip, and unfortunately my phone was flat, so I was pretty stuck. I was new to Adelaide, so I didn't know the area that well. He started putting his hand on my knee and started getting very familiar, shall we say. So I got home. Now, he now knows where I live, okay? So The reality is that 2 days later, my husband had to go away. I had reported this taxi driver because I said to the taxi driver, I need to go in and get something, which I didn't, but I wanted my husband to be able to get the number of the taxi. So I was able to report him. He got sacked, but it really unnerved me because he knew where I lived. So Nina now barks quite viciously when someone knocks at a door because I don't know who it is. But then once I establish who it is, I get her to sit and she's quiet. I don't get taxi drivers to drop me at home anymore. I only get taxi drivers to drop me at the shopping centre across the road from me, and then I'll walk through the shopping centre to go home. But she's been that guard dog. And also on the train once, I had someone being really aggressive towards me, telling me how badly treated guide dogs are, and they were really leaning over top of me. Without any prompting, Nina stood up, bared her teeth, the hair went up on the back of her neck, and she growled like nobody's business. I've never seen it before. I've seen it once since, and this guy just took off. Now, I don't know if she knows what to do next. I really don't. I've never had to test that, but she's done that 3 times now. So she's very protective of me and therefore is that guard dog. But I find at home that knowing that people are not too sure whether this dog is friendly or not, when they knock, is really useful.
I'm finding this discussion fascinating because with the medical alert dogs, one of the biggest things that we have to train them is to allow everybody and anybody into your personal space, because if you do collapse or you do need assistance, that dog can't stop them from getting to you. Having said that, though, I'm quite sure that in a real situation where you are having an aggressor come towards you, I'm quite sure the dogs would take the initiative and protect. We haven't had that put to the test yet, but from a training standpoint, yeah, we're trying to get these dogs as sociable as possible. So, interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. Nicholas is a big dog with a big bark. My previous dog, Pollock, never barked in his entire life, never barked, but Nicholas likes to bark, and he is due for retirement, so I've started weaning off him a little bit by going out and coming back. Now I use Blind Square as a GPS, I have done in the past, and often taxi drivers might drop me off next door. Now I know with Nicholas, once we're in the driveway, you hear this roar. I know exactly where my house is now, and I don't need the GPS anymore. So that's an advantage, a good sound cue.
Nicholas is clearly related to one of my dogs, Axel, who has the biggest mouth God put on this earth, but will bark at the door and then run to the other end of the house. Continue the barking. So I suspect if we're ever burgled, he would probably make a hell of a lot of noise, but be hiding under something that he'll never be able to, like under the fridge or something. He's just very wussy. But there was one instance that I was standing at a tram stop. I start work really early in the morning, 7-ish, and it was about 6 o'clock, and it was a summer morning, and I was standing waiting for the tram, and there were two young men, I guess. I think they'd had a really good night out, consumed alcohol and maybe other things, and they were at the tram stop as well, and they were having a blast. And then suddenly one of them decided to start throwing glass around. And although it wasn't directed at us necessarily, Axel stood up and the hackles went up and he let rip, and he has a bark that would deafen anybody, I reckon. And they had a heart attack and dispersed. So it was kind of good, but kind of not good because he was working, but I sort of appreciated his mouth at that stage.
I don't know about the rest of you, but every dog that I've had its own unique kind of mischief. The first dogs that I had would just chew things. And the worst dog I had for digging holes was Corey, right where I'd have to step into the backyard and find a huge hole. his puppy walkers were in Tasmania, and they came up to Brisbane on a visit and came to visit and said that their backyard looked like the moon when Corey was there. But nothing could have prepared me for Quinny. When I trained with her at Bald Hills in Brisbane, I put the water dish in the ensuite bathroom. I'd feed her and fill the water dish up again and sit it under the basin. And I was standing at the door of the bathroom, and I could hear this circular scraping sound. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And she was turning the water dish and turning the water dish until she got a fair speed up, and then over it went. And I found then that there was no possibility of leaving anything with water in it lying anywhere without us being tipped over. And that's the first dog that I've ever found that's done that. And after a while, I just got so tired of mopping that I bought big buckets and filled them up so she couldn't tip them over. And another thing that she did when she couldn't tip them over was if she'd find anything on the floor, she'd drop it into the water. And a couple of months ago, it is now that the census papers came around. And
right where they belong.
The lady put the census papers in the letterbox, and because they were so bulky and I was pulling the letters out, they obviously fell on the ground. But that night when I was washing up, I thought, there's a letter in this in the sink. And after I drained it, I got it out and realised what it was. They were the census papers, so I had to, inverted commas, be spending the night at my solicitor's place up the road on census night. They invited me up for tea and included me on their papers because Quinny had put mine in the kitchen sink. And Quinny turns 9 in January, so it looks as though they never really grow out of their mischiefs. Has anyone had any serious trouble with mischief?
Wickham's my first dog, and it was actually quite a shock when I got him because he's a Labradoodle, but I wasn't actually told just how naughty he could be, and he's very, very smart. I was living with my mum at the time, and she had this very old frangipani tree out the back door, and I used to feed the magpies this mince. And I'd put it along these branches and they'd all come in and eat. One night, he hadn't come in, nor had my little one, Cookie. So I go out the back and I'm screaming for this dog, and I went round with the torch looking to see if they got out. But he hadn't. He got himself stuck in this blasted frangipani tree. He must have been watching me for weeks, and he thought, now I can do this. I can do this. And the only reason I could find him was that my little dog was looking up. And when I put the torch to the tree, I could see these four legs hanging down. And I thought, I'm not going to ring the fire brigade. I'm not ringing anyone. This is embarrassing. And at the time, all I could think of was, don't you dare break that frangipani tree. We're selling the house. Do not do it. Because if he'd broken it, it would have taken out half of that tree. So I get up there and I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's really jammed, stuck. He hadn't barked, he hadn't done anything. And I thought, he's really, really pissed off about this. So I get two legs, push him straight over the branch, and this dog goes tearing back into his naughty room in the bedroom. And I didn't see him for half an hour, so there you go. And another time, when I started having him at work, he must have lined up this poor tradie's sandwich. He'd gone, we go to this back area from my work area where he actually goes to the toilet, and there used to be these benches where all the tradies used to have their sandwiches, and that he must have seen this fellow with this sandwich in one hand and drink in the other and having a good old yarn. He'd walk straight up around the side, turn the corner, took the sandwich and off he went. It wasn't even a blink of an eyelid. And I would not have known he'd done that if the tradie hadn't called out and said, "Hey, your dog's got my sandwich." So there was $15 gone. So, yeah, Wickham does a lot of things, but he's very smart and he comes unstuck, and sometimes it's just too funny to believe what they do.
I can't resist talking about my previous dog, Shadow. First dog, totally unprepared for a foodie dog, and I mean a foodie dog. I know Labradors love food, but she could clear tables, she could clear bench tops. You know, I had to learn. I put a frozen loaf of bread on the bench top, came back and it was half the size. And the whole back half had gone, and I found the plastic somewhere, but the rest was gone. She too got into my husband's hydroponics garden, and that's all string lined with tomato plants right up to the top of the shade house that we had there. And I hadn't noticed she was gone for a while, and he came home and there was a woof, little woof, woof. And he thought, "That sounds like a dog." And he went up the back garden and she was completely and utterly stuck. And I mean, hydroponics are all in, you know, on stands with water flowing, and she was there. If we had visitors over, and I'd say to people, "Now don't feed my dog, she's not allowed to have any food." And somehow we'd sort of get up to do something and come back and the food was gone. She went and stayed with some friends, two lots of homes, and they both confessed, "Yes, you're right." She cleared tables and bench tops there as well. It was really quite embarrassing, and I thought I was doing something wrong, but I happened to go to a podiatrist one time, and she said, "Gee, is that so-and-so?" And I had changed the name, and I said, "Yeah. I knew the puppy raiser." Oh, you've no idea how food absorbed that little puppy was. It was into everybody's rubbish bins. We raided the kitchen. Anybody's drawers that were open, it was into that and everything. And I thought, oh, it's not me. It made me feel a lot better. And now I've got a second dog. She's not all that interested in food at all. It's so different. It's really good. Because you're on edge otherwise, and food-absorbed dogs, oh, gosh, it's so hard.
I think supermarkets have a lot to learn about those loose bread rolls on really low shelves. Yeah, and other sort of foodstuffs in supermarkets.
Why do pet stores insist on having their loose, very stinky treats right in front of the counter at dog level? The first time I got my first dog, Axel, went into a pet shop, standing there, la la, minding my own business, crunch, 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 crunch. Did he not help himself to a pig trotter and eat it? And then they made me pay for it, scabs. I was happy to, but it's like, and it was right at his face level, standing in front of the counter. So needless to say, every time we go into a pet shop now, I'm paranoid about where my dog's face is and what they may be getting into. I just don't understand it.
Somebody many years ago sadly passed away now, Herman Dorland, in WA, totally blind and did have a bit of a hearing impairment as well. Anyway, used to pay his bills down at the local chemist, which was also had a Commonwealth Bank in it and those sort of things. Now, every now and again, he'd come across this tinfoil in his bathroom of his home. He could never work out where it was coming from. Until one day, somebody stopped him when he was on. It was about a kilometre away from his home. Someone stopped him on his way home and he said, "Do you know that your dog's got a chocolate in its mouth?" And so what this dog used to do was, as he was paying his bills, would lean over and grab a chocolate. And this is the intelligence of, you know, what a Labrador could probably do. Grab a chocolate and knew not to do anything with it, walk all the way home, and then he'd take off the harness and the dog would go into the bathroom and he wouldn't see it and it would eat the chocolate. So for a Labrador, that is not being tempted to eat that straight away. That dog learnt to wait till he got home.
Hi, it's Martine here. My first dog, when we moved to New Zealand from South Africa, we used to still make biltong and dried sausage in our internal access garage. So we had all the drying cupboards and everything there, and we made sure that it was always closed. And one day the door wasn't kept closed, and Hetty ate about 2 kilograms of dried meat. And we thought, well, we just make sure there's enough water around because there's not much else. She'll just be quite dehydrated. But it resulted in a lot of gaseous attacks. And then the next day I had a function and this van of blindies were picking me up to go. And they said everybody must bring a contribution for shared lunch. So I picked up, I got some cheese and crackers. And just as I got into the van with all these blindies, she let rip, and this one blindie said, "Oh, and Martine, we know you brought boiled eggs for shared lunch." and that same dog, when he was still in South Africa, just before my university years started, I would look at the program very diligently and get a local O&M instructor to help me to walk from, say, building A to building B, so that if I've got 10 minutes to get to the next class, and after about 4 attempts, I made it in 6 minutes. So I was very happy. I was fairly well prepared. The students could turn up now. And after the second day, I rang my mum and I said to her, "You better come and visit me. I actually made building B in 3 minutes instead of 6 minutes." And she goes, "Oh, what happened?" And I said, "Well," and she visited me and I was just covered with, my hair were covered with leaves. And I said, "There is obviously a hole in the hedge and all the students were crawling through the hedge. And my dog decided, why should we do the long way? We're going to crawl through the hedge too." So from then on, I just made sure I comb my hair and we crawled through the hedge as well.
Okay, it's Bev. I've had 2 retrievers myself. I'm not sure if anybody other than Warwick is a retriever right now, but they use their mouth as pockets. They don't generally destroy anything, but they use them to carry from A to B or whatever. I've got lots of stories of my own, but I think the funniest one is when I was in Canada, a fellow student got a new guide dog. It was a male golden retriever. She was a student of theatre or something or other, and she was walking down the street. She'd only had the dog a few days, I think, and she thought, "Oh, he seems to be walking a little strange." She put a hand down, and she was so embarrassed. Her male golden retriever guide dog had a bra. Walking down the street, proudly walking down the street.
Okay. Now, luckily, this isn't my story. This is the story of my classmate. So, Tom, if you're ever listening to the podcast, just dobbing you in, mate. So we got to take our dogs home last weekend. And he was looking around for his toilet harness and, you know, he couldn't find it. And then he grabbed something and he goes, "Oh, yeah, that must be it." He walks out into the lounge room. His wife goes, "What are you carrying around my bra for?" He picked up the bra thinking it was the toilet harness. And he's about to try and put it on his dog.
One of the problems I've had with all my dogs is trying to stop the public from feeding them. How do we do that when we often don't know that it's been done? I can remember I attended a social gathering once. It was the inaugural meeting of the International Year, actually, and someone was giving giving the dog chocolates under the table. And when I discovered that was going on, I panicked, you know, and it really is very, very difficult to stop the public from giving them things. Right, well, our time is up. I really don't think that too many members of the public realise just how important our dogs are to us. I think our families do. All of my dogs have captured the hearts of my relatives, and I think that they do understand that when the dog goes, it's like a family member going. But I think that we really do need to plug away at public education, join forces with people who have other service dogs, and with people in general who argue that the dog is a man's or a person's best friend. I don't think that applies to all of us. I think our human relationships are more important, but I really do think that the benefits that we get from the guide dog must be transmitted to the public so that they can be cooperative. And that wraps up my session.
Thanks, Joyce. That was really good. And I think what we might learn from this one is that we should allow a little bit more time for people to have these kind of discussions. So I'm over listening to my voice, so I guess you might be too. The last session today is all about you guys and all about the issues that member issues, what you want DGHA to work on. I've already got a couple of things that people have mentioned at the conference. So this is really open up to the floor to talk about the issues that we need to, as an organisation, work to in the next little while.
This is one that I'd like to flag now for future discussion, unless people have very strong opinions for or against. But I would like to suggest at a future special resolution meeting that we change the name of the organisation from Dog Guide Handlers Australia to something like Assistance Dog Handlers Australia or Service Dog Handlers Australia or something along those lines, to be more politically correct and more inclusive. We have had some input from some assistance dog organisations today, and I think that as dog guide handlers, we're pretty well represented. We've got good peer support information, advocacy, etc. But I'm quite keen for DGHA to be inclusive of all service or assistance dog users. So just to flag that and maybe have a, you know, for and against discussion at some stage.
My final word. I would like to push for the organisation to try and make everything national so that we don't have to have state-based laws all the time. And it makes it much easier to move around Australia if we can use the same ID and whatever all around the country. And I would also really like a card for our service animals that is easily recognisable, very hard to make up from the internet or whatever for those who think that they should take advantage, and that is easily recognised by taxi drivers particularly, and all other places. So a nice bright colour that represents our assistance dogs.
I'd say two things. I think as a consumer group that we could liaise with or push for, like looking at a standardised harness or something like that. These various efforts or what's the word? There's various things going on about developing harnesses by different organisations. The other thing is maybe in around future conference, maybe we could look at involving the local Lions Club. I don't know about you guys, but when you got here the first day, you need to get to the tea area, but you have no idea what where it is, and you end up just like hanging around. And if there were a few more people around, just providing assistance, it could be made easier.
I'm really sorry, everyone. I just like to talk a lot, and I know that my opinions are really important. I just would like to raise the issue of toilet harnesses. I think they're the best invention since sliced bread, and I was really surprised to find out that not all schools in Australia are using them regularly and training their dogs to use them regularly. And I just think it's something that we really need to advocate for, because it can make a huge difference to toileting patterns for our dogs. For travel, it makes it a huge, huge improvement. And I just, yeah, I think it would be great if we could have that as a consistent part of, you know, that at least dogs have been socialised to the toilet harness.
Okay, so we're finishing. We've only got our closing remarks from David and Rowena to go.
Yeah, I bought a Dremel, which is a power tool for doing a dog's nails. It's like a, it's like sandpaper. It's rotating as one of the attachments is a sandpaper disc. So instead of using a clipper, you can actually just sand your dog's nails down in like about two seconds. You hold it onto the nails, and of course you need to acclimatise your dog, habituate them to the sound, to the feel, whatever. So there's a training process that goes into getting them used to it, but it's very easy to do. The Dremel that I've got is the Dremel 3000. It's the one that's got a variable speed control. So it can go from very low to very high, and of course you want to use it on quite a low setting, and you only want to do it for like 2 to 3 seconds on each nail, and you can do it sort of every week or so, and it gradually just sand off the dog's toenails instead of having to worry about clipping them. And it doesn't hurt if you actually sand your own finger, because I tried it. It takes your nail away, you know, you do end up with a bit of a divot in your nail, but it doesn't hurt you or your dog, so... I've got it here and you can have a look.
Thank you, Penny. Okay, so can we go to our closing remarks? We might finish just a little bit early. Rowena and David.
Oh, there's really not much left to say except thank you all for attending. I mean, it's just been a fantastic weekend, quite a lot of overload of information, but it's been great to be so interactive. Again, thank you to our guest speakers, and we look forward to the next one. And as I said, it's a member-driven organisation, so please, members, keep your feedback, just, you know, email, whatever, with your ideas, with issues and things, and your committee is working for you and working for dog guide handlers around Australia. So thank you very much. I'd probably like to hand over to David to just thank our sponsors. Sorry, David, but do you have a list?
There's a list in my head somewhere. I'll just echo Rowena's comments in relation to the call for people to think about the conference, think about the feedback you might give over the next few weeks, and think about the opportunities you might have to support or even join the committee in its pursuit of the objectives of the organisation. So it doesn't stop here, it really starts, because it's a journey we're on that doesn't end. So. And in relation to the kind folks who made much of this possible, quite aside from Erica and Greg, who worked tirelessly, particularly over the last...
Yeah, Mr and Mrs DGHA, we call them.
Yeah, above and beyond the call of duty to pull much of this in the last couple of months and weeks together. So thanks very much. And
three
certainly three cheers for Erica and Greg. Hip hip. Hooray! Hip hip.
Hooray!
Hip hip.
Hooray!
Excellent work. And, of course, the people in the committee and the executive. But for those who provide some financial and certainly some moral support, RSB here in South Australia and GDA and CEDA, and GDA and CEDA were able to provide significant funds, as some of you were able to avail yourselves of to make the event possible. And we get a good news tick to the federal government for a change, in terms of the Department of Human Services and the funding for disability conferences. And we managed to, albeit very late in the piece, got their tick of approval. I don't know whether they knew the conference was only 3 days away, but that's when they forwarded the money. So interesting times there for the treasurer, who's come back for more as treasurer, so he's quite happy with that level of stress. So in closing, again, thank you one and all who were able to come and participate so fully and so completely. I think it was an excellent range of topics with excellent people from all over the place, not just our patch, but across the way. So thank you all for your attendance, and we look forward to contributions over the foreseeable and to the next event, which could be anywhere. It may not be here, but it will be somewhere.
And safe travels home, everybody.
I just want to say while we're on the conference, I know we had limited time through the AGM, and this is in Rowena's report, but thank you to those committee members that have been part of this team for the last year, Nicole DeMera, Tracy Cross and Ross Fitzell. I thought I just might mention those while we're still on the recording.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?